Hey, everybody, Zach here. Before we get started with the podcast, I just want to let you know about our sponsor, Anchor. We're new to podcasting here at Salty Saints, and Anchor has made it so easy for us to get started. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast, so let me explain a little bit about it. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or your computer. Anchor will then distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything that you need to make a podcast in one place. The best part about Anchor, though, is that it's absolutely free. So if you, like us, want to get your word out there, you want to try your hand at podcasting, make sure that you download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Salty Saints. I'm Zach, and I'm sitting here with Jason Kemp. A couple podcasts ago, we talked about digital minimalism, and we said that we would come back and we were going to talk about social media specifically. And so that's what we're doing today, social media.
Yeah, we made a commitment that we would view that Netflix documentary, Social Dilemma, and then talk about it.
And I have now watched it twice in 2 days. And so.
And I waited until the last minute to do it for some reason.
Absolutely.
I don't know why.
Absolutely, we did. That's just how our brains work, man.
I don't know that I was specifically procrastinating it. I think I knew what was going to come across, but.
You got sucked down a social media rabbit hole and got sidetracked. Is that what happened?
And that's why I didn't watch it?
Yeah, I'm just being lame. All right.
No, and it's interesting because we're recording this on Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Which happens to be the day that we are, as a church, all month we've been talking about fasting.
Yep.
As a spiritual discipline. And today we are supposed to specifically be fasting from social media. So it's kind of ideal that we're talking about that today.
And I messed up because I woke up and I got on Facebook. And then I came in here and Randy's like, yeah, well, we're doing the fast. And I was like, but they've all been on Fridays. He's like, remember we pushed this one back because we didn't want it to be on Black Friday. I was like, oh, yeah.
So you can do it on Friday now.
Well, either that or I'm just going to ride out the rest of this day. I think God appreciates it either way.
There you go.
We'll see.
There you go. Well, based on the digital minimalism thing, I haven't had Facebook on my phone for quite a while. Yeah. So I have not been.
It's off mine too, man.
I have not been sucked into it. No. Oh, sorta.
Okay.
Somebody direct messaged the church today. Well, I guess really like around 1 a.m. last night. Direct messaged the church through Facebook asking a specific question about services. We are actually looking for interpretation for Taiwanese.
Oh.
And it was like, no, not quite. Swahili and ASL, but not Taiwanese yet. So, yeah. So that was interesting. So I did respond to that, but.
That's fair. Yeah. That's a tool at that.
That was
point.
For work, and
right.
Randy said we could do stuff for work, right?
Exactly. So,
okay,
getting into it,
right?
We kind of drew out a plan, a little bit of a kind of the tracking of the thought in that documentary,
right?
So we could kind of follow along with what they were trying to get at.
Well, it was a ton of information.
Oh, it's so much.
It was overwhelming. I mean, it's an hour and a half of testimony from people who. Were the inventors of these technologies.
And they're all kind of they all added to it. Like, they weren't all just saying the same thing. That was the crazy part.
Right.
Like, and this thing goes deep.
And it wasn't one guy that felt 99% of it and 10 more people that added just 1%. No, they were all deeply disturbed by what they have created and what they have done and where it could lead and things like that. And so that was,
Yes.
It was crazy. So, I love the aspect that they brought up that they really thought they were a force for good in initiating what they were thinking about and how they wanted to connect people and how they wanted, like one guy said, you know, when we created the like button, we wanted to spread love and positivity around the world.
Right.
And, but none of them realized the potential consequences of what it has become, how it's taken on a life of its own,
right,
outside
later,
of its original design.
Young girls are going to be, you know, hating themselves because they don't have enough likes.
Right.
Not enough people click the like button.
So, and not to blame young girls. I mean, I think it's...
Right, but that's the example he uses.
Right. Yeah. They gave specific stats about that.
Right.
Maybe we can mention that later. But
right.
Yeah, it was terribly sobering.
Yeah.
And, but yet, you know, and like what we talked about on the digital minimalism, that technology is so magical, that there are such amazing things that we can, you know, benefit from technology.
Right.
You
and
know.
So while this is going to be a terribly pessimistic outlook in a lot of ways, we are not dogging technology as a whole. Technology can be a beautiful thing. Let us get that out of the way. Like,
right.
It's got its time and its place. This is more about the way that we've let something – we've created a monster that's growing at an unreal rate. Or,
right.
You know, I mean, and I mean, quite literally, we collectively have created a monster. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty crazy.
Right. And this can go back to what we said in digital minimalism. I almost said digitable.
Digital. Oh, my God.
That was awesome.
It happened like four times in the last one.
That technology should serve us, not us serve technology. And we want to harness technology to benefit us and to bring value to our lives. And what this documentary showed is... that is the last thing that's happening in social media. I mean, if we, you know, the good that does happen on social media of, they mentioned a couple examples of like, you know, an adoptive kiddo in adulthood is able to reconnect with a bio mom or bio parents, you know, what a beautiful story. But that at this point in the life of social media is the exception.
Right.
It's, That was the goal they hoped to create through social media. And while some of that happens, it's now the exception, not the goal.
Right. That's the outlier at this point.
And that was really sobering.
Yeah.
So
from the top, I mean, I think the central message of this thing, and it's kind of where they start from, is that did you just ding? Oh, my goodness.
My phone is going nuts over here, and I don't want to look at it.
It's trying to get you to pay attention.
It is.
It knows what's happening right now.
It knows.
The central kind of point from which they start is that, you know, in most scenarios, you're being sold a product. But with social media, you're not being sold a product.
Right.
And in any situation when you aren't being sold a product – generally, that means you are the product.
Right.
You are what's right. being sold. And can we kind of explain that really quick?
Well, I mean, that was one of the base beliefs or perceptions that I had about social media that I think I'm wrong in, is that I thought I could hack the advertising game.
Right.
Oh,
that doesn't work on me.
Right. I fully recognize this is marketing, this is advertising, and I am not going to click on that. Even if it's a good deal.
Right.
And so I've actually seen something on Facebook or Instagram and go, ooh, I want to know more about that. I will intentionally not click on it, and then I'll switch over to a browser and Google it. And of course, when you Google it, there's paid ads at the top too, right? So if you click on their ad, they're making money that way as well.
Right.
And I'll scroll down into the search results, even if it takes me a couple pages, to find what I'm looking for so that I don't play the advertising game.
Right.
I've always felt like, oh, I'm hacking the advertising game. Nope. I lingered on it.
Right.
That was enough for them. They don't need your click. I mean, the click is that much more. But, our attention, our mind's attention is what they're looking for, is what they're gaming for.
Well, they actually explicitly state, like, it's not your information that they're selling. That they don't benefit from that.
Right.
They're using your information and the things that you – like, basically, every time you look at something on the internet – on social media, they're monitoring how long you're engaging with it, what you're engaging with, what that's connected to. They're using that information to build a straw man of you, to build another you that they can reference and say, okay, this is who they are. This is what we're going to push on them. And by getting you to engage with those things, advertisers are actually the customer. They're paying the social media to capture your attention in order for you to possibly go buy their product later.
Right.
Is that – that's it?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that there, it's a double marketing scheme that, you know, yes, we're – we see ourselves as the customers trying to buy a product from a shoe store or, you know, whatever. But really what's being marketed in that is our attention. And to keep our attention, they have to develop those addictive profiles.
Right, because the longer you engage, the more money they make.
Right. I mean, if you were really into shoes and tennis shoe ads are capturing your attention, they need to know that so that they don't show you an ad about jackets.
Right.
Because, yeah, I've got a jacket. I don't care.
Right.
But I would take another pair of shoes.
Right.
You know? And so they profile you. Like you said, that straw man, they create this digital version of you to understand who you are, what your preferences are, what hooks you in longer.
Right.
And then the eventual goal on that is that it would affect our behavior, how we think, how we act, how we behave, not just what we buy, but that we're even favorable to ideas and concepts and mindsets within our culture that we wouldn't have been without all this.
Right. Kind of go into that a little further.
Well, like, what happens when the products play out? Like, we've marketed all the tennis shoes. You know, how many times are you going to actually look at those shoes again?
Right.
And so we have to move from tangible products to ideologies and you know, and so the problem that the algorithm has encountered is that our attention spans are short,
right?
For good and for bad, and, you know, but in this case, if our attention span is short, and well, I just spent all my money, I don't have any money, so I'm just not going to click on any ads to buy things. Well, now it's ideology, it's news, it's what's going on in our communities, what's going on in our nation, and when our attention span loses focus on that, the best way that the algorithm knows how to hook us more is to take it to another extreme.
Right. Or to push something. I don't know that it's necessarily attempting to take it to an extreme, but that's often the result.
But that's kind of what hooks us deeper.
Right, right. But when you say it that way, it makes the algorithm almost seem like it's doing something nefarious. And I don't think the algorithm doesn't know what it's doing. It just knows what works. It's just doing what it knows will hook you. It itself, it's not got a conscience.
It's a student of human behavior.
Exactly. It's always learning. It's always getting better at hooking you.
Right.
Whatever that means.
Right. And so if you take cat videos, I mean, let's just, you know, you've watched a dozen cute cat videos, and then number 13 is, say, AFV, America's Funniest Videos, that had some cat videos, but there were also some human fails in there where, you know, people are on the tree swing, you know, not making it into the lake, or the guy on the pogo stick that you always know what's about to happen, and, you know, the middle-aged man on his son's bicycle going off the bike ramp, you know what's about to happen. And so from video 13, you're starting to go from cute cat videos to fails to, and then epic fails. And then next thing you know, you're watching dash cams from Russian car wrecks.
Right. Or, you know, like Taliban execution videos.
Yeah. It just, you know, the algorithms had learned that to hook us longer and deeper, you gotta take that next step. That cute hamster videos aren't going to do it.
It's further and further down whatever rabbit hole grabs your attention.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. And so, I mean, that was something that was really frightening, I thought, is they were talking about these companies and the people who write the algorithms who are the only ones that truly understand the algorithms.
And they don't even fully understand.
And they don't fully understand from the moment they hit enter and that goes into the system.
Right.
where that algorithm goes in a split second, they don't even fully understand that process.
That's so scary.
It really is.
I mean, we've built kind of our like social construct. Like it's a sorry, that's a poor way of saying it. Like an aspect of our social interaction at this point completely hinges on that not knowing. Like, mm-hmm. like we've put our absolute faith in a system that even the people that made it don't understand completely.
Right.
I guess that's what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. And they talked about, there was one point later on in it where talking about we always fear that AI will take over the world. You know, what there's a ton of movies about this, like
Terminator,
Matrix, and, Terminator, yeah. iRobot, maybe. I don't,
sure.
Sure. I mean, you know, that some AI decides, you know, human emotion is weak. And so
Age
we're going to.
Ultron.
We're going to. Ah, Avengers, yes. Yeah. Avengers. Yeah. You know, we're going to wipe out humanity because humanity is weak. And that's always what we feared about AI, but that it overcomes our strengths as humans, as humanity. And but then they talked about, but what about when AI eclipses our weaknesses? So our addictability, our, you know, the things that like kind of the dark side of our personalities, outrage and anger, and even, you know, even simpler than that, incredulousness. Is that a word? Of that feeling of being incredulous. My aunt's an English teacher.
What's incredulous?
Of being like, there's no way that's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I skeptic. Feel incredulous. Like, skeptical, sure.
Yeah, skepticism.
Yeah. Okay. I don't even know what we were talking about. Good grief.
When
AI takes over the weak, right. You know, when it eclipses those weaknesses, then we're controlled at that, at the level of our weaknesses.
That's the beginning of addiction.
Yeah. And they were kind of saying, that's already happened, people.
Yeah, right. Like it's already in control.
We're already in that age where AI is stronger than our weaknesses, but weaker than our strengths. Somewhere in the middle there. And that was creepy.
Yeah. So that is creepy. And I think the what he actually alluded to was like, what do you say? Checkmate humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah, like game over humanity.
That's like war games.
That's so scary. Man. Yeah, war games. That's old school.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry if I offended anybody by saying that's old school. I was little. I was a little kid.
That's right.
I may not have been born. I don't know.
But, yeah, I mean, it. You know, I've always known that what social media puts in front of you, you know, they kind of know who you are, what you look at, what you've clicked on in the past. But they were pretty explicit that they know how long that certain something lingers on your screen.
How long you look at it, they're kind of building connections between you and other people. They used the example of you looking at like an ex-girlfriend's pictures. Like
yeah.
They like it was just really weird how specific they get
right.
with what they're keeping track of.
Like a couple years ago, a full confession moment, right?
Okay.
A couple years ago when you applied to serve here at New Hope.
Right.
I checked you out online.
Oh, dear Lord.
But you didn't have a Facebook profile at the moment.
Smart kid, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, we've even joked about, you know, hey, if we go stalk that Facebook profile, does that person ever find out that I was looking at their profile?
Right.
And I don't think so.
No.
I don't
Facebook
think there's
knows
any,
you were looking at their profile.
Facebook knows. And they're extrapolating what kind of relationship you have with that
Ooh.
Person. Whether you – and based on your other clicks, do you agree with their viewpoints or are you against their viewpoints? And they serve you up more information based on – oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's scary.
Yeah. And how – you know, and so they talked about the manipulation of – How individuals can be manipulated of, you know, seeking these addictive behaviors that profile your tendencies that lead you to deeper addiction and unfortunately more extreme versions of your interests
right.
to keep you hooked, keep you interested, to take you further down those rabbit holes. But they talked about the large scale manipulation, even on national levels of how
yeah.
countries have been moved and shifted and shaped by things that happened on social media alone.
And I mentioned this to you when we were watching it, just kind of taking notes, but Joe Rogan had a guy in from the U.S. military, from some branch, I don't recall. Mm-hmm. This was a few weeks ago. And the guy was talking about how China and Russia, you know, make these profiles on our social media accounts, and they just get in there and they start pushing narratives that try and stir people up to argue with one another.
Right.
Like they're stoking the flames of the fire. And he says, I know they're doing that because we as the United States are doing that to them.
Right.
And so it's like what they mentioned in the video is it's not like these foreign nations are hacking into the mainframe of Facebook and pushing some kind of narrative that this wasn't designed to do. They're just using Facebook in the way it's designed to be used.
Right.
And it does that. It can change the way people think.
Right. Yeah, there's that. There's just moments in this that you just have to pause and let the thoughts settle.
Right.
And then exit so that you can deal with the next one.
Well,
so.
Well, it's like they just keep hitting you with the next thing. You're like, oh, yeah. Now I understand it. Nope.
Right. Right. And you want to
there's
just,
more.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we've gone quickly down the rabbit hole, so to speak, of jumping to, you know, Russian hackers in the election. And,
right.
You know, they named a number of countries specifically. I think they started with Myanmar and, you know, a couple others that just saw widespread, you know, destruction and chaos based on social media. But the part that really hit home was based off of, like, the guy was saying, you know, we created the like button to spread love and positivity through the world. And then he backs that up by saying, but we had no idea that years later, the absence of those things in somebody's post would create feelings of anxiety and depression, and that we would see rates of, you know, self-harm among teenagers, especially, and suicide escalate. I mean, I don't know if they've drawn a direct correlation research-wise.
I mean, that's how they made it seem in the documentary.
Well, I'm saying outside of this documentary, I don't know that it's a direct correlation that they can prove this is exactly what happened. Right. But those who created the software feel like it's exactly what happened.
Well, I mean, the time frame lines up perfectly, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And the quote that you and I were laughing about earlier about there's only two industries that call their clients users.
Yeah.
Is drug dealers and software makers.
Yep.
You know, and how those likes and the hearts and the approval system within social media has created a drug. A dopamine. I don't even understand the physiological, psychological process in this.
It's playing off of your psychology and the way your psychology works. It's a part of you. I mean, it's literally, I mean, the guy says, I'm addicted to my email. And this is the main developer in it that's talking.
Yeah.
And he says, I literally, like, I feel it. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel it. And, like, it's part of him, you know?
Right.
And
their testimony about, I created the tricks.
Yeah, on Pinterest Facebook.
I created the systems to suck people in, and I got sucked in by my own things.
I go home at night, and I'm supposed to be, like, playing with my kids, and I find myself in the pantry sending an email, right? Like, he's – and that's what he says. He says, you know, like, and I know what it's doing, and I still can't get away from it.
Right.
Like, what does that say?
By sheer willpower and brute force, he was unable.
Right. One of the guys said that he wrote
software.
A software program that would help him break his addiction from social media. What? Like, these are the guys that make it. And they made another great point. They said, you know, like, how do you wake up from the matrix when you don't know you're in it?
Right.
And that's where we are. I think so many people don't even I didn't understand even my function in it. And you
didn't either. No.
But like,
I thought I did.
Right. And and I think that's how I looked at it too. It was like, oh, well, that doesn't have me, because I don't really like click on the ads and stuff. But that's not what they want. You are playing their game, whether you know it or not. And so how do you wake up from something you don't even know you're a part of?
I love that they used the Truman Show quote in that part of, you know, which it's a fictional story. And I remember this quote going,
not anymore.
I know. That we accept the reality that we are presented.
Right.
And, this is what the world is like. And, you know, we kind of went back and forth a little bit about, looking at the polarization of our politics and our viewpoints in our world right now, especially in America, and how distant the right and the left are from each other. And you hear it so often of, how can you believe that? There's a base assumption on either extreme that we're seeing the same things.
Like how is it that they can't understand this the way I understand it?
Right, because I've seen the evidence and it's drawn me to a very clear conclusion. How can they come to a so wrong conclusion? And they're saying it's because they're not seeing anything close to what you're seeing.
What you see on your feed is custom fit to you based on the straw man that they have of you.
Right.
Based on the information you've given them.
Right. And if you go all the way back to the root of that split from the center to the left and the right, the first click on either of those two people
is huge.
No, I would say that first click is like 0.00001% different.
Really?
Because then it wise from that moment, and it becomes so much more different down the road.
Okay, so
do you see what I'm saying?
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is that first click, maybe say it this way: that first click doesn't mean a whole lot, but the second one,
right?
The second one
that
changes
the first
everything.
Click could be, what's your favorite color, Zach? Well, mine's blue green, and what's my favorite color? Well, you know, it's green blue. Those two choices are. There's so little difference between these two choices. But then the algorithms, they split it. And the next thing you know, you're, you know, how could you like green, blue? Give me a break. You know? I know that's cheesy. But
I don't know that that's, I don't know that's the example we needed, but no, I like it.
But we're going on the fly here.
But yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, we have then taking this concept of like, I don't know how they don't see it my way.
Mm-hmm.
And we hold them accountable. Like, we hold the person accountable for not seeing it your way. But most of what they're getting fed is nothing the same as what you're getting fed.
Right. Because they're at the other side going, how do you not see it my way?
And so the fact that we are unaware of that system.
Yeah.
I think that would at least maybe like that doesn't mean we have to feel different about our political views or the other person's political views, but it definitely means that we need to rethink the way we hold them accountable for the way they came to that conclusion. Like, we need to be more lenient, understanding that that person is just as kind of brainwashed to see their way as we are also sort of brainwashed to see the way we are.
Right. Well, we are contrasting different media that has shaped public perception over time, right?
Right.
Like newspapers. Newspapers were designed for general acceptance by the masses.
Right.
And there's small iterations made of, well, this column did better, this type of news did better, but it still had to be generally accepted by the entire city.
Right.
And, you know, and even cable channels, and you could probably even go back to our mainstream media years ago, still had to appeal and connect with the majority of their target audience. You know, if you're a regional channel out of Chicago and you get played in seven states, your news has to fit and make sense to the people in those seven states. And now we're in an age where everybody's news feed is totally different from everybody else's. And it's so individualized, so that it just gets us off track so far, doesn't it? I don't know. I don't know where I'm going anymore.
No, you're going exactly the right direction.
Yeah, and I just don't know how to verbalize it anymore is what I'm saying. Just kind of like
It's longer that the news is speaking to everyone as a whole. The news is speaking directly to you, and they can tell you exactly what you want to hear.
Right.
What they think you want to hear.
Yeah, and so we struggle with there's no news channels that are down the middle anymore that appeal to the general masses in the middle, because even the people in the news are sucked into these left or right echo chambers of confirmation bias and
right.
Yeah.
Right. And wow. That's not to state that there's not still a fundamental truth out there. It's just that you're getting spun whatever the monster thinks you want.
Right.
Yeah. So don't think that we're saying one side's right, one side's wrong, or that everybody's wrong and everybody's right. It's not that.
Right.
This is fundamentally about the thing that is feeding you your information.
Right.
And it doesn't care about the truth. It just wants to give you what you want to see so you'll stay connected.
Right. And the algorithm knows that, hey, there's 100 people that clicked on this, and their profile is very similar to yours. There's a high chance that you're going to click on it.
Right.
So it serves it to you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think we have a responsibility as Christians who guard truth, because I think that's part of our role in the kingdom is to guard truth, that we have a responsibility of what we click on and what we spend our time on. That, you know, I've clicked on, you know, clickbait titles in the past of, sure, like, are you serious? Are they really saying that? And incredulous.
There you go.
But by clicking on that, now it might serve it up to you because it knows we're friends and
right,
we have similar viewpoints. But I wasn't clicking on it to promote it, but it doesn't care.
Right.
It doesn't care.
That's the closest it can get to truth is that click.
Yeah.
That's all it knows as truth is the click. That's what one of the ladies in the documentary said.
The click is truth.
Yeah. That's all it knows.
Yeah. And that we vote for what is truth with our every click.
Right. Which is a completely separate thing from the actual truth.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Your vote matters.
It does. Your vote matters, and you're doing it every day.
Doing it every day.
Every day, whether you know it or not.
So I want to come around to some biblical truth on this.
Right.
Before we do, I want to address that some of this stuff that we're talking about, I don't know how to affect. Like,
no.
Civil unrest in Myanmar. Where do I start with that?
Right.
You know, the political divide of left and right, you know, the polarization in America, how do I start with that?
Right.
You know, but the place that I think is even more personal that's within this is what we talked about earlier, is the effect on our own psychology of seeking this digital dopamine reaction within ourselves.
It's like a god in the palm of your hand in a lot of ways.
It is. And, you know, older generations who grew up in analog eras, you know, and really we're probably talking millennial and older. And I know millennial is the first digital generation, but digital didn't include social media until just a handful of years ago. So Gen Z is really our first social media generation. So older generations, we kind of were not as in a formative state of life learning to deal with social media. Does that make sense?
Right.
And so we see the reality of where we should be developed relationally as humans. And so we're not as formative when Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and Reddit and all these things came into our lives. And so we recognize more of how that affects us.
It's like social media got fit into the framework of what we already saw as important. But for this for Gen Z, they framed what is important around social media.
Right, because they suddenly have access to these things within their most formative years.
Right.
I mean, middle school sucked as it was.
Oh, it's awful.
I don't know anybody that goes, oh, yeah, middle school is the best year of my life, you know? And then you throw social media in that, in their formative, and, you know, and so some of the stats that they were talking about, and they were talking about just girls.
Just
so
girls.
This isn't boys. And I suspect they were talking about the girls because the numbers are probably a little bit worse.
It's probably for girls more engagement. And
boys. Probably, you know, yeah. You know, because self-image might be a little bit more important to the middle school girl than the middle school boy that whose parents are still trying to encourage them to shower, you know,
right, kind of thing.
So, so for middle school girls, non-fatal self-harm, so cutting and different, you know, I don't
probably
even,
burns or yeah,
right. Just, I mean, there's a dozen different things there. That it has raised 62% in the last few years for girls 15 to 19 years old.
Yeah.
And for girls 10 to 14, preteen, 189% rise in self-harm just since social media has released. And that's just, it's heartbreaking. And then the numbers of suicide that teenage girls 15 to 19 is up 70%. And suicide among preteen girls, 10-year-old girls to 14 years old, is up 151%.
It's unreal.
In the last number of years. I mean, it's just, it's heartbreaking. And these are our children. These are our kids in youth ministry right now. Yeah. And so this is a very personal aspect of social media that we can affect.
Right.
We know how to affect that. I don't know how to affect, you know, what's going on in Africa because of social media. But I know how to affect my house, my family, my, you know, the people in my circle. And so I think if, you know, if you watch this documentary, I think that is one of the things, one of the challenges that we should all walk away with very and consider very seriously is what do I need to do with my family, with those around me? How can we lead our families in this well?
I would take it further. Even.
Go for it.
That seems like the easy answer to monitor, you know, what your family can do with social media. Mm-hmm. But by the end of this documentary, I truly feel like the only way to fix this problem is to quit social media.
To get out
completely, because it's beyond fixing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond, like, the way it works as a whole, it cannot be fixed. It can only be quit.
Right, because one of the solutions brought up is let's build better AI to fix the broken AI.
Let's make it bigger.
That sounds like great. You know, or the other solution was more government control over how human data is used.
And we know that always works out.
Yeah.
More government control.
I'm with you. I'm with you on this.
But it's hard to say that, though, because,
right.
Because here's the thing. I bet the knee-jerk response to so many people watching that video is to get on – because I thought about it. I swear I thought about it. I watched it, and I thought, man, I want to, like, make a post on Facebook about how terrible social media is. And I stopped and I thought to myself, and I'm like, you idiot.
Right.
That's exactly the problem.
I almost did it just for the irony of it. But yeah.
But like, that was my first thing. It was like, people need to know about this.
Right.
I know the way to reach a lot of people really fast. Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's, it's just more gas on the fire, man.
Right. Right. But I think, I'm with you. I'm on global scale, the best thing to do is delete. But that's also the best thing to do for your family. And so by taking care of your family first, you're also taking care of the world.
Oh, so you're saying delete, like family delete.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were like saying monitor the use.
Well, I have two adult kids, and we held off as long as we possibly could on social media. To paraphrase loosely, one of those adult kids has come back already and said, I hated it, but I see why you did it.
Right.
And I've got a couple more that we are holding on as late as possible. And that time frame may have just been extended greatly. They watched it with us. I don't know if they fully understood what's coming down the pike, but and I don't think they listen to this podcast. So.
That's so funny.
But at the end, they asked these creators, do you let your kids have social media? Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
One is like, we are zealots about it.
Right. Like,
yeah. And these are the people that created it. And they won't let their own kids have it.
Beyond that, though, they asked them, you know, what do you think is going to happen? Like, what? Where do you see this going?
Oh, man.
And the first guy says, short term, civil war. Short term, civil war.
I'm like, what's long term?
Right.
I don't even want to know.
Yeah. Then the next guy says, you know, if we keep on this path in 20 years, it could be the end of human existence. And Right. Now I don't know.
I know
all that. Yeah. But still, I mean, he said the collapse of civilization. Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. That could absolutely happen. There's nothing in my biblical worldview that says otherwise. But end of the world, I don't know. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, don't take this as Zach and I are like 110% on every bit of information in this show.
No, because we weren't.
There's a lot of things that we would like to see dealt with a little better, or, you know, like I don't fully understand. Like I maybe get on Facebook once every week or two, and I'm usually not on there long when I do, because I'm usually getting on there for a specific reason that I need. I mean, like I'm a part of groups that relate specifically to what we do here at the church, and it's great to hear. I mean, I find solutions in these groups of how has this church dealt with this technology problem, and oh, you found a fix that way, great, you know. And so it's useful that way. And so every once or twice a week, I'll, you know, every couple of weeks I'll jump on, but I don't linger because I've really grown to dislike it very much.
Sure,
you know. So I use it as a tool, and so I don't understand. And that's what the documentary didn't answer for me was, what's the difference between deleting and just flat out not using it? Does that make sense?
It didn't seem like there was a lot of difference.
But
why keep it if you're not going to use it?
But why do we have to use it for hours a day? I loved that they had the kids on for that one, and you know. The daughter's making fun of the son, saying, oh, 6 hours and 30 minutes of Instagram use this week. It's right. Almost an hour a day. And then she goes, oh, but mine's worse.
Right. Right. But my thing is, like, if you're basing this on that every little thing you do is spiraling it out of control. Because like mm-hmm. we said, if you watch a video with cats, you can end up watching a video with car wrecks and executions. You know what I mean? Like, because that's how it spirals.
Right.
So my question is, well, if I just spiral it really slow because I only use it every once in a while, like, is that okay?
But if all I'm using it for is to find out how another church fixed their live stream issues on a Sunday morning because...
Right.
Does that affect the spiraling?
Right.
I don't know.
But
are there ads in there that
I'm missing?
Are
there not better ways to do that? Like a discussion board
that isn't Facebook. Who uses those anymore?
But my point is, if all you're using Facebook for is a discussion board, then why not just have discussion boards?
Right. So how do we – I mean, that's part of the solution that we don't understand is, yeah, we delete all this, but there was some useful things.
Sure.
That came from this. So sure. how do we build that into our technology? Because certainly technology is able.
Right.
So yeah.
Okay.
I mean, right now I don't know where else to go for that type of connection. So how do I find that? You know, not that I need it often, but where do I?
Well, I personally am probably just going to delete mine because I was thinking about it anyways during the election. And then I watched this and I'm just like, I think I'm out.
Like, yeah, but then, you know, but we've got people here in the church I mean, myself included, who part of our role is to manage the social media presence of your business or your organization. Where do we take that ethically?
Are you perpetuating the problem?
Right.
At that point?
Are we contributing or?
Yeah.
Is the church, you know, if the church is trying to insert good and truth into social media, which I think is noble, but nobody's clicking on it, are we being poor stewards of our resources at that point?
Right. It's something that needs to be a genuine discussion that needs to be had. And not just one of those things where we say, yeah, we need to talk about that, and then you just don't.
You know, we made a comment about how beautiful some of the videography was with the cameras and that they used. So are you saying that we need to shoot our own documentary called The Church Social Dilemma?
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be a good time.
Yeah. I think we're at the end of the podcast, Zach.
Are we?
We're going down rabbit holes.
I'm sorry. Okay, listen. Here's what it boils down to.
Yes. Biblical truth. Let's wrap this up.
Because that's the problem. That was kind of where they all landed on this documentary. This thing is pushing what it sees as truth on you.
The AI. Yes.
Right.
Yes. And I think we're in total agreement with the documentary. AI should have absolutely no voice in determining what truth is.
But as long as you're engaging with it.
We're giving it voice.
We're giving it voice. Exactly. Yes. And so the point is, truth doesn't come from social media. Truth doesn't come from anything but Jesus Christ. That is the point we're trying to make here.
Right.
What was the verse?
John 14:6.
John 14:6.
Which says?
I am the way, the truth, and the life.
Absolutely.
And so if Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, then we should turn and say, well, what does he have to say? You know, what are his commands? What are his beliefs? Because when we come to know the character of God, we come to know what truth is. The problem is, and I noticed this while watching the documentary, is they kept putting this emphasis on truth. But from what I understand, this documentary doesn't have a Christian bias. It doesn't have a Christian grounding. I mean, that's never implied, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I felt like they left it open-ended as to, I think the strongest statement was, we need to determine what is truth.
Right. And so,
but they never really qualified that.
But the importance of that is, you cannot qualify truth outside of Christ. It does not exist separate from God. If you look at an atheistic worldview, there is no grounds for truth because nothing has meaning. Everything is an accident. We are an accident. We came out of an explosion, and we just by circumstance exist. And therefore, there is no right. There is no wrong. There is no truth. There is no morality. And we can make claims to that. But at the end of the day, we have nothing to build it on. We have no solid foundation to base those claims on if there is not a God that laid order and morality and truth into the fabric of his creation. And there is, spoiler alert, there is. And his name is Jesus Christ. And so that's what this all boils down to. We've kind of put our fate in the hands of this thing that has no understanding of what truth is. And we use it to determine what we believe. Mm-hmm. But we should be finding what we believe through the word of Christ.
Right.
Is that fair?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's more than fair. I think it's truth.
We didn't hash that out completely, so I just kind of...
But you're right on.
I was just going.
And if you want to dig deeper in that, I think it was Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, where he starts at a very secular atheistic worldview and proves that just to have a concept of truth, you have to admit there is a moral God.
It's the first chapter.
Is that chapter one?
It's the beginning of the book.
Okay. And then through the further chapters, he proves just through logic, reason, and it's brilliant how he does this. And he's spot on of there is a God, and that God is the God of the Bible.
Yep.
And it's Jesus. It's beautiful. It's lovely.
Right.
So
Right.
The other thing that we talked about in terms of truth is just that nature of how social media polarizes our thinking to the extent that we begin to isolate ourselves and we begin to crave others who talk and think and behave like us. And so I've blocked people on both sides of the fence, not just the opposite side for me, because I like opposing viewpoints.
I do too.
I want to hear what other people are thinking and feeling, because I, even if they're wrong, it sharpens my understanding of what I believe when I defend my own thoughts. But I've muted people on both sides of the fence who are just
so stuck in their own worldview.
They're communicating out of rage.
Yeah,
it's so ugly, and and there's no openness to what they're saying.
Right.
What they say might be true, but it's how they're saying it that turns me off, and I've muted them.
The goal isn't love. The goal is making the other person feel stupid.
Right.
Right.
And so I've fallen prey to, I'm going to isolate myself. I don't want to hear those voices. And social media draws us into that trap when biblically it's not even close to what we should be doing.
No.
And so what we begin to crave on our digital life begins to bleed over into our physical life.
Because they're connected, whether you like it or not. Who
absolutely.
You are online is who you are in reality on some sense.
Right. You can fake things along the way, sure, but
right.
It's who you are.
Right.
So I'm pulling up because I don't have this one memorized.
Yeah. And as you get there, the idea Jason's getting at is we as Christians are called to love people. We're called to surround ourselves with all sorts of people proclaiming Christ to all those people and loving people and living as Christ in those people's lives. But when you shut yourself out and distance yourself from the people that don't look or think or sound like you, you're not doing that. And so you're failing in spreading the gospel at that point.
Right. And by isolating ourselves to our own little version of who we're limiting the voices that we allow into our life, which, okay, there's some good
sure.
to that.
It's sure. good to be selective.
Right. But what we end up doing is we begin giving credence to voices that have no
authority.
Right. Yeah. Or qualification or, I mean, used to have a platform of truth, even if it's wrong and it's your own version of truth or whatever, to have that platform in our culture, in our society, in our lives, you had to work to get there.
Right.
You either had to have schooling or some kind of qualification, something that bestowed that authority on you. Now all you have to do is have an account and an opinion.
Right.
And suddenly you're an influencer.
Right. Right. If people are watching you, you are.
Yeah.
And you know, the Bible says that the teachers are judged more harshly.
Right.
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 Well, what's a teacher these days?
Right. And so 2 Timothy 4:3 is what we've been talking about, that a time is coming when people will no longer listen to sound and wholesome teaching, and they will follow their own desires and will look for teachers who will tell them whatever their itching ears want to hear.
Now, I would have never connected those things until watching that documentary.
Right. You know, I almost want to, if somebody had made a social media platform and call it Itching Ears, I think it would take off hugely.
So,
verse 4. Oh, we didn't even see this earlier. They will reject the truth and chase after myths.
There you go. I mean, that's prophetic, man.
Yeah.
And we're living it.
Yeah, I know. That was Paul to Timothy 2,000 years ago. So guard truth. Guard your families. Guard what happens in your digital world. And we can have global ramifications through that.
And to say this really quick, when guarding truth, as hard as it is, you need to draw the line on the things you learn on social media and say, there is no way I can fully know if this is truth. There are some things, because of social media, because the algorithm runs so deep, can you really know if those things are true? You know, we're hearing this and we're hearing that, two conflicting things often, both being pushed as the truth. But when everything's doing that, how can we really know truth? We go to God. We go to the Word. That's the only thing we can know is true.
Right.
I'm sure there's some people that are going to disagree
with
that.
I think there's a middle ground, though, that just because somebody posts something or somebody else promotes it or somebody makes a five-minute video ranting while sitting in their front seat of their car sitting outside of a restaurant or whatever doesn't make it true. We can fact check. We can dig.
But my point is, even fact checking, though, even that has a bias now.
Yes.
What we know. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Yeah. The rabbit holes.
Right.
Yeah.
How can you ever even know the fact checks are also true? My point is, the only thing we can know.
But I'm saying there's been some, like we've seen some in the COVID pandemic junk of somebody saying, oh, I was fired from such and such job because they wanted me to falsify this. And then somebody actually looked into the employment history and they never worked for that company.
Right.
You know, sure. There is some fact checking like that that's indisputable. Sure. But you get into conspiracy theory.
There's certain things that
certain
are
things.
Big. There's certain things
how,
that are
how in
big.
The world. Right, right. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is some can be checked.
Okay. That's
that
fair.
Makes sense. And we should always check things against biblical truth, which is basically saying the character of God.
Right.
If somebody is saying we should go out and do blah, 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 and we think, well, that does not fit within the character of God.
Right.
But that person's a Christian. I should.
Right.
God told me specially.
Well, be like the Bereans. Be like the Bereans, like Paul says. Be like the Bereans. Go to the scriptures. See if it matches up. See if it's there.
Yeah.
And if it's not, discredit that person. That is not truth at that point. And that doesn't mean everything they say isn't true. But that means that thing's not true. Mm-hmm. We need to fact check everything we hear against the Word of God, not against what social media throws our way.
I agree.
Man, I feel like I got like the weight of the world falling down on my shoulders right now. Like this was a sobering, kind of scary one.
I know. Like, and you want to just go scroll social media to
unwind.
What can we watch on YouTube? What do we got?
All right.
Yeah.
We did it. You think we did it? We're good?
We did it, man.
All right.
I think if people have hung in this long and they've not watched it, I hope this pushes them to go watch it. Because we can't – this is so big, we can't hide from this.
It's called The Social Dilemma. It's not completely without a bias in a few areas, but – overall, the information is really good.
This is an issue we can't look away from.
Right. And even if you don't agree with everything they say, you've got to agree with some of it. I mean, it's going to open your eyes in a lot of ways.
And one of the things that I think it's opened my eyes to is, as a church, we've been talking a lot these last few months about some really serious things in our culture, from racism to LGBTQ to immigration to abortion. I mean, these are some major moral God's truth type of issues in our culture that I'm sitting here wondering, would these be as bad as they are today
without social media?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like, oh my goodness, how could let's just delete it, people, and maybe we'll find that we really do love each other.
But
we don't
real,
hate each other on the other side. Yeah.
If you feel inclined, get rid of the thing. If you like, honestly, if you can do without it, get rid of it. Like, I think I'm gonna. I feel like I
well,
have to.
Just do a 30 day fast, like we talked about in the digital minimalism.
Right.
Just get rid of it for a month, and see what and monitor what happens within your emotions, and your psychological well being. That it's going to take a couple weeks for you to totally deprogram from that, and then a couple more weeks of leaning into things that do bring you happiness,
Yeah, I don't know. All I'm saying is I don't know that the pros outweigh the cons of it existing at all, I guess is my final statement on it.
And
no matter what you do, I don't think any 30-day cleanse is going to make that any truer or any less true.
I'm saying if you can't hit the delete button, at least do a 30-day.
Right.
And see where that leaves you.
Right.
Because back to the quotes of we accept the reality in which we are presented. And so we have to create a new reality to get out of this, to get out of the matrix.
Right.
You have to pull out of it to be able to see it. And so if you don't, if you can't just hit the delete button, at least set it aside for a time.
Right.
Delete it off your phone. I love, as Donna and I were talking about this last night, that, you know, put your Facebook password into a 30-character long gobbledygook of characters and numbers that there's absolutely no way you can remember it. Put it on a sticky note. Stick that on your laptop or your home computer and make your devices set to where it doesn't remember your password.
Then where it's just that hard to get in.
Just to get into Facebook, you have to type out that ridiculous password that you're going to mess up four times before you actually get it right. Make it hard to get into and then see where that leaves you.
It's not bad.
Feeling later on, you know, that, you know, put some protections in place.
And, you know, here's the thing. Like we said at the beginning, technology is not a bad thing. Technology is a tool. The problem is we have created a tool that kind of has a mind of its own and is running and growing at a speed that we can never fix at this point. And so even if doing away with social media is what happens, that doesn't mean technology is going to go away. We don't
Right.
need to think that way. Technology is here to stay. Mm-hmm. It's the way we're using it that needs to be revised.
Have we let technology become our master?
Exactly. Because at that point, we're idiots. Like, we can't do that.
Right. Okay. I'm going to end with a story, and then we're going to sign off.
Oh, my.
You good with this?
Let's do it.
So last night, when we finally watched this, the credits started rolling. The kids got up. All right, good night, Mom, Dad. You know, they went upstairs. And we just kind of let the credits roll. What does Netflix do at the end of the shows now? Used to, your movie would just end, right?
Mm-hmm. They give you a new one.
Now they show you three next, you know, watch this next.
Right.
And they actually give you previews of it. So it automatically goes into those previews. The first recommended movie after Social Dilemma was called Minimalism. Right after we've talked about digital minimalism, we watched Social Dilemma. And the first movie, I'm like, I've got to watch that, actually. It was on minimalism. And so the curated content suggestion, even through Netflix, knows where I'm at, what I want to hear, what I want to watch. And now I'm going to have to go watch another Netflix.
It's creeping into everything.
It is.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just love the quote of the guy, you know, they're saying, turn off notifications, because that's just to draw you back in. Turn off notifications. And, you know, why would you have notifications in your pocket? I mean, that's the same reason I don't put cookies in my pocket, because it's a temptation I can't resist. So
keep those cookies out of your pockets, folks.
Actually, cookies in your pockets are safer than your phone notifications in your pockets. So let's go get cookies. You want to do that?
Yeah, let's go get cookies. All right, everybody.
Good to see you, people.
Stay salty.
Hello, my name's Rachel Carmen, and I want to invite you to come over and listen to my podcast. It's called Real Refreshment. For years and years as a young mother, I chased after the wind, thinking that the world could offer me the refreshment I longed for. But it was only when I discovered it in the person of Jesus Christ that I really found refreshment. Come on over and join me as we dig into Bible study. I'll see you there.